Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Okay, all right, Scott, let's play it straight, because I think we're recording now. I just heard the button click.
Play it straight? What do you mean?
Well, you know, none of the usual hijinks we get up to pre-recording.
Okay, got it.
So let me take off this silly hat.
Clean up your language.
And clean up my language. You know, I do love a curse word. Well, welcome back to High Speed Stuff, right? And here we are. I'm me, Ben, and you're you, and you're Scott.
That's right. As usual.
That sounded like there were three people. I'm sorry. I messed that up.
Mm. Sounded good.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll just go with it. Yeah. We'll just go with it. So today, I was actually very excited because for our listeners there, Scott showed me a video, and this is not unusual. Oftentimes, Scott, you'll stumble across something, and I'll get an email link with something like, you should check this out.
Yeah, I do this all the time. I get real excited about the videos. The recent crop of racing videos. I love them. Yeah, they're awesome.
And to take up the cause with you, I have always found those incredibly fascinating. Some of them are a little bit scary, and one of those in particular, to be quite honest with you, what's the most eloquent way I can say this? It freaked me out. I don't want to be in that car.
Freaked you out, really?
Yes. We are talking about Pikes Peak International Hill Climb.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Pikes Peak International Hill Climb, all right. It's actually the second oldest automobile race in the United States. I don't know if you knew that or not. And I think, I'm guessing here, I believe the Indianapolis 500 is the oldest racing event in the United States. So, but this is the second oldest. It's been around since 1916, and I guess from really worldwide, competitors have come to the mountain in July, and I don't know if it's always been run in July or not. I would assume it was just due to weather. It's run in July right now, and they've come to the hill to find out who can get to the top the fastest. It's a timed event. It's not a, you know, there's not 10 or 12 cars on the course together at the same time charge into the top. It's one car at a time. They stagger them. They're different divisions. I think there are 11 different divisions this year. Mm-hmm. And it gets a pretty good turnout, really. I mean, you wouldn't expect a lot of people to hike up a mountain or drive up a mountain and stand, you know, waiting for one car to go by and see it one turn. But, you know, it's a lot like rally racing where, you know, you get to see just a small bit of the course. You choose where you want to be. They said they had 35,000 people.
35,000?
They were expecting 35,000 this year. And wow. You know, watching the video, most of them are near the bottom, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as you get near the top, the crowd thins out a bit, as does the air.
Sure.
So it's interesting race. It's really cool to watch. It's an interesting idea. I think it's really neat. We should talk about it a little more.
Let's see. That's funny. So I guess if we can, let's touch on the basics here. We mentioned that it's unique among a lot of races because this sucker is almost all the way uphill, right?
Do you want to know about the course? I got the stats here. Okay,
yes.
The course, this is unbelievable when you really think about these numbers. It doesn't start at ground
sea level?
Yeah, at sea level, at zero altitude. It starts somewhere around, I think it's around 9,000 feet. 9,390 feet is the beginning. I'm looking at the map right now.
That's the beginning, yeah.
The beginning, yeah. We both have a copy of the map in front of us. You can follow along with me here. But the course length is 12.42 miles. And get this, it has 156 turns. So you're turning left or right, or left and right, 156 times before you reach the summit. Because they do race to the very top, which is at an altitude of 14,110 feet.
14,110. That's crazy. I think that's I'm not going to ruin it, but I see a couple of interesting plot twists coming up here. With that altitude.
It's okay. You can ruin it if you want. Go ahead. What were you thinking?
I'm thinking, well, as you said earlier, that obviously could impact people walking around,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Which is probably why there's a lot of people who would prefer to see the car start than to see it finish. And also, probably more importantly, I bet it has some effects on the driver and the engine.
You are exactly right. Yeah, the crowd aspect of it, there is, oddly enough, there's altitude sickness to deal with. Not only that, but the driver would have to deal with this as well, because as they, you know, approach the summit, air becomes thinner, and the apparently the driver's reflexes slow. Just their body slows down. They've got reduced muscle strength. It's got to be extremely challenging, because you have to be at the top of your game. I mean, at that point, you're in a race car on a mountain. You know that one side is the mountain, the other side is a cliff. So a lot of danger involved in this. And you mentioned the car as well.
Yeah.
This was interesting to me. We know that altitude, you know, the air thins at altitude, right?
Sure.
As you gain altitude. This is kind of a progressive thing. So starting at the bottom, the car runs completely different than it does at the top because it's being choked for air. Cars need a lot of air to operate, of course, and race cars use even more air to operate. This is unbelievable. By the time they reach the top, it progressively reaches the point where I think they said 30% of the car's energy or power is sapped by the loss of air. So by the time they get to the top, the car is running at 30% less power than it had at the bottom of the course. So the car is, you know, the horsepower and the power that the car is able to, you know, apply to the ground, which is gravel at this point, by the way.
Wait, what?
Gravel.
Not the whole thing.
No, not the whole thing. They start out on, you know, follow along on your map here. The at the bottom, you know, the map shows where there's pavement and gravel. And if you notice, it goes from pavement to gravel, back to pavement, and then back to gravel again. So this is a ridiculously challenging course. And, you know, drivers have to adjust for that. Not only have to choose the right equipment, you know, to be able to, you know, the right tires and, you know, suspension setup, et cetera, to be able to handle both types of terrain. But they just have to have the skill to be able to drive on both types of surfaces, because we're talking about drifting, we're talking about a lot of rally driving techniques that we've talked about those in the past.
We've hit on a lot of racing techniques.
There's not really jumping going on in this, because it's normally a public road. Normally, tourists are able to drive to the top of Pikes Peak, and here's an interesting thing I read. I found this last night. If you or I were just to go to the top of Pikes Peak, guess how long it would take us to get there. Now, this isn't the same exact 12 miles. We're talking a total distance from starting at you know, the bottom of the mountain.
Okay.
They start somewhere around 9,000 feet.
Okay, so
it's a longer distance. It's about 38 miles.
38 miles.
Round trip.
Round trip. Okay, yeah.
Wild guess.
I'm thinking, I'm doing the math, 19 miles, yeah. Right? 40 minutes.
40? No way. No, you would be flying up that mountain at 40 minutes. That'd be 60 miles an hour up the. That'd be averaging 60 miles an hour almost up and down the mountain. So that'd be like race speed, right?
Well, I live dangerously.
Close to. So. I know you do.
You're just kidding. You probably you more than.
It would take 2 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours and a half a tank of fuel is what they say that it would take to get just an average vehicle up and back down the mountain. That's 38 miles round trip.
Holy crap.
Now, they cover 12.42 miles in, get this, the barrier, the magical number right now is 10 minutes.
Really?
10 minutes. And there are turns on this mountain. I saw them in the video. There are turns that, you know, say slow down, 10 mile per hour turn. So you can imagine the you know, the steepness of this course. I think they said there's up to a 10% grade at some points. The average is, I believe, 7% grade. That's the average. So it gets pretty intense. This is up and down. They don't race down, but there are parts of the course where it's a downhill run.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the terrain. And kind of lost my train of thought.
No,
60 miles per hour would be what we'd have to drive all the way to the top and back down, and there's just no way you could do it. I mean, you can understand the problem there. So these guys are going way faster than that, more than 60, of course. You'll see if you watch these videos.
Right.
Covering 12 and a half miles in 10 minutes. And that's not everybody. That's one particular division.
So, okay. I have some questions that I plan to ask, but I want to stop quickly. No, you know what? We'll get to it in a second. I guess for our listeners who haven't heard of this race yet, what would you say are some of the main differences, just to sum up? It sounds like we've touched on a lot of the main differences between Pikes Peak hill climb and, you know, NASCAR or some other rallies?
Okay, well, first, I guess, is the classes. I mean, we've talked about the course and the mm-hmm. distance and, you know, how it, they call it the race to the clouds. That's how strange or odd this course is, that, you know, you're headed up in one direction. It's mm-hmm. a hill climb competition, which isn't unusual, but this is a really big one. Again, you know, 12 and a half miles, a timed course, 156 turns, mm-hmm. all this, you know, this altitude to deal with, you know, the thinning of air, the slowing of reflexes, et cetera. The other thing is that, you know, there are 11 classes that run on this course, and it's everything from cars to super stock, what they call super stock cars, which are, I believe, modified cars. Pro truck, which is, you know, trucks, of course.
Really?
There are big rig type racing vehicles that go up this, believe it or not. These mammoth, big rigs. They're racing big rigs. But to me, those are pretty exciting to watch as well.
Yeah.
Because these
yeah.
guys, and they're not kidding around either. I mean, they're hanging the rear end around the turns, too. Hanging the rear end out around the turns as well. You know, they're sliding, they're drifting, really. Around the turns, these big rigs.
They're like that guy in Can It Drift?
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
the name of that YouTube
yeah,
series?
Yeah. Will It Drift.
Will It Drift, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, so these guys are unbelievable. I mean, fearless. And they run everything all the way down to, I think it's 250cc motorcycles, and they have quad runners. They have, of course, motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
Cars, trucks, open wheel racers, this Unlimited series, which is where you get the 10-minute mark.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. But just interesting. I mean, it's really,
yeah.
really, the diversity is unbelievable.
It's staggering when you think about, I just, you know what, I cannot help but think of how terrified I would be to take a genuine big rig around some of those turns, especially that one, was it the one they call the bottomless pit?
Bottomless pit, yeah. There's a turn called the bottomless pit that everybody knows about, and they give it a little extra care when they run that turn. But it's not truly bottomless, of course. But I've seen conflicting reports here, and I've got a bunch of stuff. But the best I can determine from what I've seen is that it's about a 1,000-foot drop.
Jeez.
And thankfully, so far, no racer has ever gone off of the edge of the bottomless pit, because I would have to say that wouldn't be a good situation.
No,
but I mean, you'll see in this video, if you watch it, the one that I'm talking about, and it's, you know, I'll come up with a name. Hang on, it's called, it's Reese Millen, mm-hmm. who, you know, you can catch this video on mm-hmm. YouTube. Reese Millen, it's spelled R-H-Y-S, and then Millen is M-I-L-L-E-N, and the one that we're talking about is where Reese Millen, it says Reese Millen smashes the Pikes Peak record.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the 12-minute video, and that shows the entire run. And if you watch that video, you'll see that along the way, there are hay bales stacked up on the side.
Yeah.
And that always kind of cracks me up, because a hay bale is not going to stop a race car from going over the edge. But it is a good visual indicator of where that turn is, because when you get to a certain point, you know, there's no trees. You're above the tree line. And it just kind of becomes this one big wide open landscape that looks very similar in all mm-hmm. directions. It's kind of tough to tell where the road is and where, you know, you're off the road in kind of a ditch, and then you're in a really precarious position. So, you know, it's nice that they put these hay bales up mm-hmm. to mark these big turns so that these guys don't, you know, shoot off the cliff, I guess.
We mentioned a little bit about the strategy of choosing the correct equipment and vehicle.
Mm.
Are there some things that these racing vehicles have in common or that are specialized for this race?
Well, they all have to be adjusted for this altitude, which okay. is kind of unique. So the air-fuel mixture is completely unique, and teams will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and maybe all year preparing for their run. Mm-hmm. So these are specially prepared cars that are made only for Pikes Peak in a lot of cases, not every case, but in most cases they prepare a vehicle for this run because
okay.
it's such a unique race. It has such it's just really demanding, and they have to know what to expect at every different altitude, every different type of pavement, you know, all these different turns. It's not like you can set it up for like an oval course where the you know, the mm-hmm. atmosphere stays the same at all times and or mostly the
yep.
same.
And you could pull into a pit if something
yeah,
happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't really do that. If you have trouble when you're on the mountain and your car is, you know, giving you issues, you're done. You stop. and that's it. Or you continue on with a broken car, and you know you do terrible in your class or whatever. But you know, that's unfortunate, but that's what happens, and you know, that's what you do when you're 12 miles away from the nearest person that can help you.
So the racing strategy definitely changes due chiefly to the altitude.
Yeah, this is completely unique. There's nothing else like it.
So there are now. I want to be very careful. I say this because, of course, neither of us are professional racers or precision drivers.
No.
But this race sounds sufficiently different, maybe to the point where people who are pros at, say, Indianapolis or you know, Formula One would have a difficult time.
Perhaps, but I think that you'll see a lot of crossover in that. I don't know for sure that anyone who's competed in either one of those courses have. Or either one of those series, rather, have competed in this. I couldn't say for sure because you'll often find that when a racer is skilled in his or her series, that he or she moves on to another series just to give it a try. You know, just to attempt it. I mean, there have been crossovers from you know, Formula One to NASCAR and kart to IndyCar and IndyCar to Formula One and you know back and forth. Those are the ones we hear about. But you know that you know some of these guys are you know enjoying getting behind the wheel of an off-road car as well and doing some you know some rally racing or you know something that we don't necessarily hear about all the time. But if you were to follow their you know maybe go on their website and follow them, you would see that you know there's a lot of crossover that they try to you know do these different events just to stay sharp, I guess.
And that's you know and that'd be very valuable as a professional racer to pick up as many different racing skill sets as possible.
Yeah,
right?
And not only that, you know you'd have this. More rounded skill, it may help you in the other series in some way. You may be able to handle the situation better, but also maybe you could choose a series that races in the off season, so that you know you wouldn't have an off season. You would have you know this series and then this series, like you might do winter rally racing, and then also do you know open wheel racing in the summertime.
That's you know what that's a good strategy. And while we're on the subject of the drivers themselves, maybe we could talk a little bit about. Let's say, Scott, let's say you and I are so fascinated by this that we decide, you know, forget Atlanta. We're going right now to Pikes Peak, and we are going to do our best to get involved somehow. What will we do?
Well, I guess you could contact probably the commission that sponsors the race there. I don't know, the sanctioning body that runs the event. There's a website. It's called Pikes Peak International Hill Climb. Simple as that. It's PPIHC, and you can find it online. And I'm sure that you know somewhere on that site there's a place where you can find an area that you can volunteer or you know at least contact somebody and ask about participating in next year's event. If you want to be someone who watches at the top of the mountain, you know, with a flag person or whatever. I'm not sure. All the different positions they have a lot of spots, I would think, on a 12.5 mile course. So yeah, I would say definitely check out again PPIHC online and you know ask them about what you can do.
And if you'd like to drive in the race or if you'd like to enter into one of these divisions, you'll need to do a qualifying race first, right?
That's right. There's qualifying a couple of days ahead of time before the event. And then on the weekend, again, this one's already been run this year. It was run on July 19th, I think it was the Sunday that it actually ran this year. So it happens in July. You have to be prepared way ahead of that. Don't think that you can you know come in June and be ready to run run there. I mean, it takes a lot more than that. So contact them early. You know, make sure that you know the rules and know what's required. And yeah, I'd say go for it if you can.
This, you know what, I went away from it. The final question we used to ask a lot, but I have to go back for it for this one. But you know, and don't let me step over. Is there anything else that we should let people know?
One more quick thing.
Yes.
Quick thing, and I'll try to keep it brief. But we mentioned that the record up Pikes Peak is right now around 10 minutes. Right?
10 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. It's actually 10 minutes. Hang on. I'm searching my notes, scouring my notes.
10 minutes in a.
Ten minutes one second, and you know, just like. Hang on, here it is. The current record for the unlimited division is 10 minutes, 1.408 seconds, which was set by, and I'm going to mess up this name, Nobuhiro Tajima, who is the current record holder in his Suzuki XL7 Hill Climb Special. Now, that record was set in 2007, and this year there was an attempt at that record that was made that didn't quite make it. In fact, Nobuhiro, again, won this year's competition in the unlimited division, but he didn't break his own record. Mm. The previous record was held for 13 years. That's how difficult this record is to break.
Jeez.
And the previous record was somewhere around, I think it was like 10 minutes, and I thought it was around 15 seconds. I've got that wrong, but it's somewhere around there. He broke it by about 12 or 13 seconds, something like that. So that record was held by another Millen, as a matter of fact. That was held by Rod Millen.
Huh.
So, you know, that 13-year record stood for, that's a long time for
right.
it to stand. And then just 2 years later for, someone to say, I've got a chance at breaking this record, that's pretty unbelievable. And it was an ex-British rallycross champion. His name was Mark Rennison. And he had, and this will give you an idea of the cars in this Unlimited series,
mm-hmm.
he had a Ford Focus, a Ford Focus RS200. Which is a specially built vehicle for Pikes Peak. This is the only race that this car competes in, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
It may be modified from this point, to race in something else. But the car, Ben, had 1,150 horsepower. So it's this unbelievably powerful car that's just shooting up the mountain. It's to make it up 12.5 miles on these turns where you're normally going 10 miles per hour,
mm-hmm.
it's doing 12.5 miles in 10 minutes. That's unbelievably fast.
I'm still trying to do some of the math.
Well,
on that.
I mean, that record run that we saw was, mm-hmm. I think it was a 12-minute run mm-hmm. by Reese Millen, and that was in a series. It's a two-wheel drive series called Time Attack. The Unlimited series is four-wheel drive.
Okay.
So that was a four-wheel drive Ford with 1,150 horsepower. Reese Millen's car this year was a Genesis Coupe, a Hyundai Genesis Coupe, and he made it in, I believe it was 12 minutes and 9 seconds, I think.
That's crazy. And
that was a world record as well. He had the world record for his class and a world record for that. Well, I guess that would be it, a world record for that series, Time Attack.
And it's so nuts if you see the way he was driving in that video.
Yeah.
This guy is drifting left and right.
Yes.
And they've got the small inset screen where you can see how he's handling the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it's a pretty big handful, doesn't it, to make it up the hill.
And his hands looked very calm.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. He's calm about it. He's professional. He's steely, I guess, against the mountain because that's a little dramatic, wasn't it?
I don't know, man. The video itself, it's a dramatic race.
It,
I think Steely is okay.
It is. It was such a cool video because, I mean, they're able to put cameras everywhere now on these cars, and you get these unbelievable views. You get views of what his feet are doing, what his hands are doing, when he's shifting. View from the center of the front bumper down low, which is really cool. That's the one I like. That's the main view.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, apparently there were a couple of cameras facing outside from high above because in a few of those shots, it switched a few times during the race. I don't know if you noticed, but that higher angle, you're able to see over the edge of the cliff at times. So there are points where he's sliding sideways facing the edge of the cliff, and you can look down into the edge and see that it's several hundred feet down. That's terrifying. And he's on gravel, of course.
Now, okay, all right. I have to call shenanigans on you here because you're saying that's terrifying. I'm saying that's terrifying. But I think I'm the one who believes it because here's the last question I have.
I know where you're going.
Would you do this?
Definitely.
See? Yeah,
no
really?
No doubt about it. I love, there's something about driving uphill fast that I really enjoy. I love it. We live in Georgia, right?
Right.
Not anything like this, I'll admit, but there's something about driving uphill fast. I love it. I don't know. I don't know if it's more control or what. It's just a good feeling. I really enjoy it. I think that I would like something like this. Now, there's a lot of danger involved in this, and there's gravel, and it's different. But I've had an all-wheel drive car on gravel before, and I kind of know that feeling. I also know that I enjoy driving uphill fast, which is an odd thing, I know, but I know that I like to do this.
That's, Scott, honestly, that's amazing. And even though I think it is a crazy race, and I respect the drivers involved, I also think they have nerves of steel. If you decide to drive to race to the clouds there, I'll ride shotgun with you.
Oh, you would?
Yeah, but don't make me do anything because I'll be worthless.
If you were a real in a real rally situation, oftentimes a person riding shotgun has to look down at a map the entire time and call out directions. I don't think they have to do that in this. I don't even know if they can have a rider.
I could totally do that. If I don't have to look out the window
at
the cliff, yeah, I could totally.
That would give me a
headache. Go left.
I would have a headache. No, yeah. that's what a rally racer does. We'll talk about that maybe someday soon. We'll have to because a co-pilot in a rally race says, left turn in a quarter mile.
Like a spotter for a sniper.
Exactly. It's just constant directions given to the driver because they're going so fast through whatever terrain they can't. It's almost as if they have to be prepared. Well, they do have to be prepared for the next whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we got way off track.
Sorry.
So you wouldn't drive yourself then?
No. I mean, I would do it if I had to do it to survive, but for fun? No.
Race or die? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If I had the choice of race or die, I would probably race, but first I would ask just so I know if I was getting into,
You'd say, seriously? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I guess that wraps it up for us today.
Oh, sure. I've blathered on about this long.
Oh, no. This is awesome.
It's a great race, though. It's really, really cool. Check out the videos online. Reese Millen, I can't say enough about the videos. They're really cool.
Oh, and for our listeners, we hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as we have. Pikes Peak Hill Climb is a fascinating event every year. If you would like to learn more about it, please do check out Scott's blog, which you can find on the homepage. And if you have any ideas for an upcoming topic or suggestions for a future subject, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.